The U.S. Congress enacted the 2002 Country of Origin Food Labeling Law so you and I could know about the origins of the food we buy. This month, the World Trade Association authorized over $1 billion in sanctions against the U.S. because COOL, as the law is known, was incompliant with WTO standards. This tug of war between our government and the world's government leads us to ask, which should control what we may know about our food? Our government or the world government?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1039th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Pucallpa who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
It's a pleasure, sir.
Hey, which do you think should control what you and I are allowed to know about our food? Should it be the U.S. government or the world government?
I say power to the people, knowledge to the people. Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes. Okay, that's a good dodge. I'll take it. Folks, do you ever wonder where your food comes from? Apparently, a lot of people do because 9 out of 10 of us supported Congress passing the mandatory country of origin labeling law in 2002. COOL, as the law is known, it requires labeling on meat products that states where livestock are born, where they're raised, and where they're slaughtered. Though COOL was popular with consumers for the transparency it provides, it was unpopular with foreign producers, especially Canada and Mexico, and with food processors, who often mix meats from different sources in the same packages. This conflict is now being placed center stage, as the World Trade Organization has authorized over $1 billion in punitive sanctions against the U.S. because COOL is, and I quote, incompliant with WTO standards. The U.S. Congress, which passed COOL, has moved to repeal the law as part of its current Budget Authorization Act. This conflict leads us to ask you, which do you think should control what we may know about our food, the U.S. government or the world government? Well, here to help us work this through, we have Michael Stumo, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Michael, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good to have you aboard. So, Coalition for a Prosperous America. Who could be outside of that coalition? Except maybe China or Russia or somebody.
Yeah, well, we're a unique coalition of manufacturing, agricultural producers, meaning farmers and ranchers, and labor. So we're really left and right and everything in between, and we're working to balance trade and to fix our trade laws so that we can produce more here, and we're also concerned about, as you say, the world government controlling our own fate with food labeling and for all kinds of other things.
Pretty much just about everything. Well, we always ask, Michael, who pays the way? So who pays the way for the Coalition for a Prosperous America?
Our members do. Our members include, again, manufacturers and farmers and ranchers and organized labor organizations. So it's member-funded.
Okay, good to go. Well, let's start with COOL. What is COOL and why is it so hot right now?
Well, we worked, actually COOL came into being before CPA, the Coalition for Prosperous America, was started, but I worked with several farm groups at the time when it was passed in 2002 in the Farm Bill. We worked really hard to get it. The multinational meat packer corporations were opposed to it because they want to buy meat from anywhere, put the USDA inspected seal on it and not tell us where, you know, it was from. But that USDA seal makes people kind of presume that it's U.S. product. And they fought it pretty hard. We got it in the 2008 Farm Bill and thought, yay, we're done. And then, but then the whole regulatory started, and they had to get regulations to implement the law. The USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, had to implement the law through regulations. And so the meatpacker lobby started working on USDA and actually bottled that up for several years until they implemented the regulations, and we finally got labeling of meats, seafood, produce, pursuant to the law.
So how long did that fight take? Yeah. How long did that fight take, Michael? It seemed like it was about a decade.
Well, yeah, it was. Well, we started the fight to get the law in 95, 96, got it in 2002, and then five or six more years until we got the regulations enacted. And now then they started challenging it in the courts and then started helping the Canadian and Mexican governments challenge it at the WTO level.
Mm-hmm. So within your organization then, it would seem like there would almost be a dichotomy of interest because you represent agriculture, you represent farmers, ranchers, and processors. And I would suspect some of those processors would be on the side of the of having no mandatory country of origin labeling.
Well, see, our members are domestic producers. They the manufacturers are. We actually don't have any multinational meat packers in our group.
Oh,
we have manufacturers. We have tool makers, plastic mold builders, steel, copper, some electronics companies and the like. They all produce product in the U.S., primarily for the U.S. market, with some export. And so, while COOL is something we're very supportive of, that we'd like to have, you know, Buy American laws where government procurement, we buy American product, not foreign product, because that's where we want taxpayer money to go, where taxpayers want their money to go. But we don't have, some of our members might have some operations overseas, but that's because they feel maybe they have to, but they are all supportive of country of origin labeling and producing more here.
Is this an effort, is the effort to get rid of COOL or mandatory country of origin labeling a way of dissolving borders?
Yes, there's a lot of interests that are coming into play here. I mean, the most direct moving force is multinational meat packers that don't want consumers to know where their food comes from. You have other governments that support their producers that want to sell to the U.S., which is the richest consumer market in the world, primarily in this case Mexico and Canada, that similarly don't want any sort of economic nationalism coming into U.S. consumers buying their meat because they want to, A, support U.S. farmers and ranchers, or B, think it's safer and legitimately think it is, you know, under a safer regulatory regime so they won't make their kids sick.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the WTO world government type that think borders shouldn't matter. And every time they do a trade deal, they further make borders irrelevant. And actually, even though it's a Democratic president, you have right-wing outfits like Cato. And I mean, we have some right-wing types and left-wing types in our group, but they don't agree with Cato or the American Enterprise Institute, which think borders shouldn't matter. We should have free movement of goods, free movement of people. And then there's kind of a liberal side, actually, that thinks global government is kind of a good, you know, a good thing, or it has in the past. You know, the kind of UN, you know, we are the world view. I mean, I'm being a little bit facetious about it, but mm-hmm. it's not fully partisan. You kind of have elements across the board.
So it sounds to me like there are two sides to this issue. One is, of course, that represented by your organization, the Coalition for a Prosperous America, that holds up local food or domestic production as being something worthwhile of protecting. On the other side, you have what? A coalition for a, not a prosperous America, holding forth that it should not matter from where food comes. We should buy what's least expensive and go from there. Is that about crystallization of what we got going here?
Yes, that really is it. I mean, at core, our group, Coalition for Processed America, we don't like the trade deficit. We don't like importing more than we export. We think we should balance. We think we need to produce more here.
And so that's our subject for today. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Michael Stumo from the Coalition for a Prosperous America and you. Really curious as to hear what you think. Who should control what we should be able to know about our food? Should it be our government or should it be the world government? 831-479-1080 is the phone number today. Pick up your phone and join us. Let's have a little fun rocking and rolling.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Well, folks, 9 out of 10 of us want to know from where our food comes from. Why? Well, that's a good question. What difference does it make? Let's ask Michael Stumo, Coalition for a Prosperous America. 9 out of 10 of us, Michael, wanted to know from where our food came from. So we petitioned our federal government to pass a law that would give us that information, and the government did. But why is it significant that we know?
Well, if there is a number one, if there is a problem with Mexican tomatoes or Chilean prunes or any seafood from, let's say, China or Vietnam, our families can, when we go to the grocery store, we can avoid product from that country. We know that all the imported product does not have the safety regimen that the U.S. does, because we're top with the safety regimen. We can be comfortable that, you know, the food will be much less likely to make us sick. And, of course, a lot of folks want to support American farmers and ranchers mm-hmm. and fishermen as well.
So there's two real big reasons there, right?
Right.
You know, it seems to me, in considering the issue for some time, that knowledge is really the power in a financial transaction. For example, if I were to walk into a grocery store and say to the grocer, I would like a tomato. The grocer is he has the kind of the power in that transaction because he can get a tomato from anywhere. Perhaps a hydroponic greenhouse in Uzbekistan or something. Who knows? Get it from anywhere because all I want is a tomato. But if I want a vine-ripened, dry-farmed, organic tomato from the Molino Creek Farm Collective in Davenport, California, then the grocer's kind of stuck in having to provide me with what I want. So I look at this effort to get rid of cool, and that's what I sense, is an effort to control the transaction. Am I wrong?
Well, that's exactly it. The marketers want to sell you, you know, what they have, not necessarily what you want. And to the extent you're kept in the dark and just buy into the brand name, that's good for them.
So then whoever has the information has the power. And if they control what information we are allowed to know, then they pretty much have the power. Let's step up to the meatpacking industry, for example, because that seems to be where a lot of the focus is on this effort to get rid of the mandatory country of origin labeling. Meatpackers, it's not like somebody goes out and butchers a cow and then, you know, cuts up the meat and puts that meat on the counter anymore. It's a much more industrial process now, is it not?
It is. It's not only industrial, it's transnational, and China owns our biggest pork packing company, and Brazil owns our biggest beef packing company.
Wow. So just like that. Now, in that meat packing process, processors often, you know, cut up carcasses and then ship parts around here and there, don't they? I mean, I'm thinking perhaps of like chicken nuggets that you get at a fast food restaurant. That chicken doesn't necessarily come from just one place.
No, especially your ground product can come from so many different places and countries, whether it's hamburger or hot dogs or chicken nuggets. It's ground up leftovers of what was, you know, at the end of what they're taking off the carcass. So you can have, I think Colorado State University a few years ago found in a hamburger patty, they found the DNA from nearly 1,100 different animals.
Wait a minute. Say that again. That's almost hard to believe.
Colorado State found the DNA from, I think, 1,070 animals in a single hamburger patty.
1,070 animals in one hamburger patty.
Right.
Well, that kind of explains why the meatpacking industry doesn't want mandatory country of origin labeling then, correct? Because with so many different animals, it would be almost impossible to keep track of that.
Well, actually, that's not the case, because they have very extensive data collection in-house to control their inventory. So they already know where product comes from, because they have to run, you know, such a huge business. Actually, that was one of their arguments, that this is so complex and so costly that we can't be expected to do it. And our response was, you already do. You just don't want to tell us.
So they almost already have to have the information, correct? In case something goes wrong, they need to be able to trace that.
That's right. They need it for, you know, just to run a business like they do. They need to know input, output, where things are for inventory, what's in product, and they have all kinds of coding mechanisms inside already to do that.
And I remember,
consumer.
I remember from the days of mad cow disease, they developed systems by which they could track a cow down, you know, across the country in just a matter of a day or two. And so,
right.
Everybody pretty much already knows where everything comes from. So then what is the reason? If it's not the inconvenience of keeping track of everything, which they already keep track of, what is the reason that they're reluctant to have country of origin labeling?
Because if they can get Vietnamese catfish or cattle from Canada or Mexico cheaper, and sell it with a USC inspected sticker for the same price, they make money. And so they don't want us to distinguish between country. They just want us to buy pursuant to the happy face on the brand. They don't want the consumer to know.
So there you are. Well, and what was it about us that finally made us stand up and demand a country of origin labeling? What was it about us here in the United States that said, hey, we want to know?
Well, there has been, of course, strong consumer movements before that put all kinds of labeling on, ingredients labeling, nutrition labeling, you know, with the calorie labeling, serving size and the like. And so the consumer movement has been, you know, effective at times getting those labels, which didn't grievously appear, and we actually have regulatory agencies that, you know, carried that out. So country of origin labeling was a continuation of that with, you know, farmers and ranchers being supportive as well. But, of course, our government politics is, number one, the multinational meat packers were very powerful. This was under the jurisdiction of the Agricultural Committee, which is controlled by those meat packers. They also had the cover of the mainline commodity groups like the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, the National Pork Producers Council, which purport to represent pork farmers and cattle producers, but are actually controlled by those same multinational meat packers.
How does that work then? Are the organizations, do they accept membership from the packers as well as the ranchers?
They do, number one. Number two, the packers are also the biggest producers now because we corporatized our meat production, cattle and pork production. So the independent producer is a minority of the production now. And also because they have collaborated to get this beef checkoff and pork checkoff where
they got their hands on all the money. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. We will be right back with Michael Stumel and you. What do you think? Who should control what we are allowed to know about our food? Should it be our government or should it be the world government? 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone. Let us know what you think about your food. Well, folks, 9 out of 10 of you and me want to know from where our food comes from. And so we petitioned our federal government to give us that right to know by passing the Mandatory Country of Origin Food Labeling Law, or COOL. Now, we fought for a long time. Folks like Michael Stumel here from the Coalition for Prosperous America fought to have that law enacted and put into process, and we finally got it. But just as things were starting to work out, the World Trade Organization just this week authorized over $1 billion in sanctions against you and I because we now have this right to know, or this mandatory country of origin food labeling law. They do not want us to have this knowledge. And so the question on the table today is who or which organization should control what we are allowed to know about our food. Should it be our government or the world government? And that's the question we're going to ask Michael Stumel. Michael, what the heck is the World Trade Organization? That question just in.
The World Trade Organization was formalized in its mature form in 1995. It arose out of the settlement in World War II when they created the IMF, International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and also they intended to create the World Trade Organization to prevent trade wars after World War II. That was not fully mature at that time in the late 40s. And was under the GATT, General Agreement of Tariffs and Trade. But then in 1995, Bill Clinton pushed the agreement to Congress, which we had agreed with other countries to make this agreement called the World Trade Organization, which really was enacted in 1995. And that allows these tribunals to rule on whether a food safety or other domestic regulation violates this international push to get rid of borders and trade barriers. So if the domestic regulation, like a food safety or food labeling, impinges on their interests of unencumbered trade across borders, then the domestic regulation must fall.
But how does food labeling cross that line?
Well, it obviously, I don't think it does, number one. Number two, I don't think that this cross-border trade is the preeminent policy issue which must trump every other policy issue. But the tribunal in this case, which has private corporate lawyers on the tribunal that sometimes represent the countries that are prosecuting a case. In fact, we should talk about that. It was a Mexican lawyer that represented Mexico's trade authority in the past with the head person on this tribunal. There's no conflict of interest.
So the proverbial fox guarding the hen house?
It really was. I mean, there are no conflict of interest rules at the WTO level, which is one of the complaints. But what they argued is that it had a discriminatory impact on imported products that the domestic product did not have to bear.
Well, just a second.
Just a second, Michael.
Isn't the principal objective of a label to allow the consumer to discriminate?
Certainly it is. But they said it was an undue burden with more record-keeping requirements on imported products than the domestic product, although we labeled both imported and domestic. It really didn't make sense. And, in fact, our U.S. Trade Representative Office did try to defend it and said, look, you can't find it was discriminatory because there is no undue burden. But they found that there was.
Okay, let's go back to those who sit on the World Trade Organization panel that is levying this $1 billion in punitive sanctions against us. It essentially, the two countries that are really fighting this, well, I think perhaps the real organization or interest group that's fighting us is the domestic processors. That's just my sneaking suspicion. But Mexico and Canada are fighting it. What about, like, China, Vietnam, those countries that from which we buy a lot of seafood, for example?
Well, this ruling has set the stage to allow China to challenge our seafood labeling. Because right now that ruling only challenged the part that said for pork and for beef. And in fact, they did find ground pork and ground beef did not, labeling did not violate the WTO. However, Congress, with the multinational meatpacker influence in this omnibus spending bill they're considering right now, has gone further than the WTO panel and will get rid of country of origin labeling for ground beef and ground pork, in addition to, you know, the cuts, the steaks, the pork chops, and the like.
This being the same U.S. Congress, which 90% of the people of the United States asked to institute the mandatory country of origin labeling, is now getting rid of it, and furthermore, getting rid of even more of it, I guess.
Yeah, getting rid of even more. So the ruling did not, I mean, that's just, there's no excuse. They're bought and paid for. But the ruling doesn't touch seafood, it doesn't touch produce, so that's still in effect, but it lays the groundwork for countries who are big, big sellers of produce and seafood, like China, like Chile, like, any other country, to challenge those rules as well. So they're really at risk. And as you say, in the conflict of interest is a problem, because imagine in the U.S. court, if you had a contract dispute, for example, with, you know, Acme Inc., and you get to the courthouse and you find that the judge last week was a lawyer for Acme Inc., and now he's the judge ruling on your case. That's what happens at the WTO.
And that's who's sitting on the WTO, as you said, is a Mexican lawyer who is representing the Mexican meat packing industry, and there you are. sounds like consumers are toast.
Well, I don't want to. They are toast in this regard, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, let's pick it up when we get back. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And I guess today, What's Eating What, is you don't know what. And we won't know what because we will not be allowed to know what because the World Trade Organization says you and I may not know the country from which your food and my food comes. And the reason, it's an unfair advantage for us to know. Therefore, we must buy whatever's in the package, assuming that it comes from a nice place with green pastures and contented cows and happy vegetables. You know it's that way because the World Trade Organization says it is that way. 831-479-1080, right back. Well, it just occurred to me that there aren't too many organizations now concerned about a prosperous America anymore. Well, at least there's one, and that would be the Coalition for a Prosperous America, headed up by Michael Stumo. Why is it that the people we sent to Congress are cashing in our sovereignty to the World Trade Organization? What's going on, Michael?
The Agriculture Committee of the House and the Senate control the jurisdiction over the food labeling laws that are at issue with COOL. The meatpacker lobby is very dominant in those committees. They donate a lot of money to each one, each member. And also, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce weighed in because they are trying to get rid of Buy American and USA-made designations of products generally, whether it's textiles, automobiles, etc., because they are on the same page as the meatpackers and they want their members to be able to import anything they want and sell it and purport it to and have consumers not distinguish where it came from.
So, it's in essence, this is a direct attack on Made in America. Made in the USA, right? Get rid of Made in the USA, and you will no longer be able to say Made in the USA. Wow. Let's go to the phones and pick up Chris. Chris, welcome to the Food Chain. Michael Olson with Michael Stumo, and you. Fire away.
Well, why does it have to be one way or the other? I mean, when we vote, it's basically Democrat or Republican, and when we talk about this, is it, you know, the government of the World Trade Organization or our own U.S. government who should have this decision? You know, you just talked about individual sovereignty. We all have the right to say, no, I'm not going to buy any of your packaged crap.
But you don't. You don't have that right anymore.
No, that is crap. And the fact that you're making this argument as if it has to be one way or the other is erroneous. Okay? I can go to the farmer's market, talk to the farmer who raises the cows, cuts the cows. He, you know, it's all these people who produce things, and they don't limit what the World Trade Organization or the U.S. government says. They, you know, I can go talk to them about their safety. I can go talk to them about everything about that cow that I'm about to eat. You know that?
Food, I don't have to. Food with the farmer's face on it.
I don't have to give up my sovereignty. You know, I don't have to let them select what goes into my body. I can pick and I can talk to this guy down the street who wants this stuff to be good so that he's prosperous, I'm prosperous, and we're all healthy. Those people don't give a damn. You just said they're all lining their pockets. We shouldn't trust these criminal organizations that have taken over our sovereignty. We need to take sovereignty back. And food is one of the main ways we can do that right now. Today, go to your farmer's market and say, screw you, WTO, screw you, whoever wants to take that away.
Wow. Woo! Well said, Chris. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. There is a choice, is there not, Michael?
There certainly is a choice. You know, and I, the only hamburger and the only sausage that I eat is from local farms. In fact, I grew up on a hog farm in Iowa, and, you know, that's the, I know a lot about, you know, hogs and cattle and the like. I only buy local. Unfortunately, even yet, and so we can be very intentional, still have the ability But most of the masses, you know, it's still single-digit proportion of our food system, the local. It's growing, and that's great. And if we have the time and the money to make that affirmative effort on that and every other buying decision, that's very good. And we still can. The caller's right. And we should support our local farmers market and local farmers. But for the folks in, you know, in inner city in the New York or LA or Boston, or people, you know, our middle classes now, with, you know, in a minority, people don't know less, although they could know more. But the fact is, people know less. The mass market is the big market, and we want to make it easy for people that don't have the time, knowledge, or energy, or feel they have the resources to do it and just go about their daily business to make it.
Sure. Tough call there. Let's go to Michael. Michael, welcome to the food chain. Michael, go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes. Why can't we just turn the situation upside down and American manufacturers of these products put Made in America on there?
That's what the whole thing is about. Is it not, Michael?
No, you're saying that everybody is required to put on the label every country from which it comes, but these people are voluntarily putting on their package, this is from America. The people who aren't bringing it in from America, they could go ahead and say that, but if they get caught, that's false advertising. I don't know that the World Trade Centers World Trade Organization can prevent people from describing their food the way they want to. If I go into a restaurant, they could say, "Oh, this meal was cooked right here in this restaurant." No one can stop them from saying that.
Good to go. Well, that's an interesting observation. What about it, Michael? What about if we just say, "To hell with the World Trade Organization," and put on the label what we want to have on the label?
Well, we still can. There's no prohibition to, you know, to saying this product was made, you know, made in America or born, raised, and processed in America. That's still okay. 90%+ of the meat market is controlled by multinationals, so that's they don't want to do that. In fact, the question is whether the government requires those who don't want to do it to identify the product country of origin.
Okay, got to hold that. We're going to come back for our quick last break. 831-479-1080. Who should control what we know about our food? Right back. Well, they simply do not want us to know, because knowledge is the power in the transaction. If we know what we want and ask for it, then they have to provide it. But if we just ask for whatever they're going to provide, then they are in control. And those in control right now, those who are pulling the strings at the World Trade Organization and the U.S. Congress, are those who have a lot of money to pull strings with. China now owns United States' largest pork processor. Brazil now owns United States' largest beef packer. So they have a lot of money to wield influence in the halls of Congress and the World Trade Organization. And so let's step back and is this good? Maybe it's good for us. Maybe that's a good deal. What do you think, Michael Stumo?
I obviously think that, you know, the domestic government is where we have the most power to influence the rules and regulations by which we live. Once you go to the world government, it's we're divested. It's the crony capitalism reigns. We have no say. We can't elect or unelect them. And so borders matter and domestic governments matter. That's where we can make an impact.
So, the World Trade Organization or the world government is kind of like a government without governments. It's really a government of powerful interests, isn't it?
That's right. With this Trans-Pacific Partnership coming up, negotiated with our U.S. Trade Representative's office, the only people with access are the corporate interests. You don't have citizen interests there.
So essentially, we in I don't know if we have any choice here. It seems like whether we want to or not, we are subjugating our sovereignty further and further and further away.
Well, yes and no. I mean, you saw the fast-track trade promotion authority fight perhaps last spring, where we almost defeated that authority, which gives rise to things like the WTO and further trade agreements that strengthen the world government. Now the Trans-Pacific Partnership is really in trouble because both the left and the right are really upset about the world government, about the economic results, and Mitch McConnell, who's a supporter of it, told President Obama, there aren't the votes, don't send it here next year. You have to fix it. So we're actually on the cusp of rejecting, we have to reject the next trade agreement that will stop the world government in its tracks because they realize they've lost the support.
Wow.
Pretty close, actually, closer than in years.
So what can we do? Us poor folk down here on the street, you know, what can we do?
The tipping point here, really, or the issue is this Trans-Pacific Partnership. I would urge all your listeners to contact their congressmen and say it's a bad idea. World government's a bad idea. We lose control of our country, and we offshore our economy. If we stop the Trans-Pacific Partnership, it will be an earthquake to the new trade deal world government complex. And they'll have to do a rethink. And we're very close. That is not pie in the sky. We're closer than we have been in 20 years.
Well, Michael Stuma, Coalition for a Prosperous America, thank you for fighting the good fight for us. I don't know who else is out there. Certainly not our Congress. So we have to bear down on them, folks. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Michael Stuma, Coalition for a Prosperous America, and you. File this one under Michael Olson's third law, or second law of the food chain. The farther we go from the source of our food, the less control we have over what's in our food. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.